quite some storm out there, what, Joseph? Come sit down. I hope you don't mind Cora's tunes.
No, she's playing fine.
Here, have a glass of gin.
I prefer vodka.
As you please.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So, tell me, have you had a pleasant journey back to England?
As you know, I hate ship cruises since that filibustering adventure, but it was fine. Met lots of noteworthy people, many Americans as well, from East and West. And as I said in a letter, I have always believed the Western people to be much truer than the Eastern people. In America, we in the East are overcome a good deal by a detestable, superficial culture, which I think is the real barbarism. Culture in its true sense, I take it, is a comprehension of the man at one's shoulder. It has nothing to do with an adoration of effete jugs and old kettles. This latter is merely an amusement, and we live for amusement in the East. Damn the East! I fell in love with the straight, out-and-out, sometimes hideous, often braggart Westerners, because I thought them to be the truer men. And, by the living piper, we will see, in the next 50 years, what the West will do. They are serious, those fellows. When they are born, they take one big gulp of wind, and then they live. Of course, the East thinks them ridiculous. When they come to Congress, they display a childlike honesty, which makes the old East laugh. And yet...
And there you can see the English influence on the East.
Yeah, and I'll tell you a story about what it's like. It is based on something I saw when I was in Lincoln, Nebraska. There was a barroom fight, and I tried to break it up. However, I tried to interfere with a local custom. It turned out those men met every evening. Then they would drink. Then they would fight. Interfering was the stupidest thing I could have done. And then I thought, what about non-interference and its consequences? Imagine Nebraska in winter. It's very easy to feel out of place in Nebraska. Those great plains, flat like a flounder and all white. But imagine it during a blizzard, the wind, the snow. Imagine a little town, let's call it Fort Romper for the hell of it. Imagine their petty train station. Imagine it in 1880, when civilization just began to creep westwards with the pace of people laying train tracks. Strange things can happen at this place, and strangers are eyed suspiciously. There's only one hotel in this town.
The Palace Hotel, and it is painted in a light blue, which makes it always screaming and howling, in a way that made the dazzling winter landscape of Nebraska seem only a gray, swampish hush. It stands alone on the prairie, and when the snow is falling, the town 200 yards away is not visible. Pat Scully is his proud and eager owner, and as is his custom, he will always be there for everyone who stops in Romper. Every morning and night he goes down to seduce new arrivals to come to his hotel. He is so nimble and merry and kindly that each traveler probably felt it would be a height of brutality to try to escape. One morning he managed to convince 3 men to come and stay in his opulent and splendid home. He is just too nice for everybody to say no, so that the 3 of them, a shaky and quick-eyed Swede, the tall bronze cowboy, and a little silent man from the East, couldn't do anything against their imprisonment. While the 4 men were making their way from the station to the hotel, inside the hotel, beside the stuff, Scully's son Jamie was playing cards with an old farmer who had whiskers both gray and sandy. They were quarreling.
I'll finish you off in less than a minute, old man.
You think so?
Less than a...
Look here, I brought some new guests with me. Get off your butt and get up the luggage of the gentleman. Now, gentlemen, welcome to my modest hotel. What about some refreshment? Here's some water over there in the basins. I'm sure you're exhausted from the long train journey. Here, some soap as well.
That washer is cold.
Well, it feels like metal polish.
The Swede, however...
You're afraid of water. Anyway, here's towels for everyone. Don't that feel better, hey? Now, why don't we go and rest a little over by the cozy fire?
They sat around the stove and reflected in the silence of experienced men who treated carefully amid new people. Nevertheless, the old farmer turned his face from the sawdust box frequently and addressed a glowing commonplace to the strangers.
I think there's a mighty bad blizzard coming up here.
Yep, can consider ourselves lucky we found a safe place to stay.
New mister from the big city. You ever saw such winter?
Oh, well, well. I'm sure we'll be all right in here.
You sure can hope the best.
To all of this, the Swede said nothing. He seemed to be occupied in making furtive estimates of each man in the room. He might have thought that he had the sense of silly suspicion which comes to guilt. He resembled a badly frightened man. Later, at dinner, he spoke a little, addressing his conversation entirely to Scully.
Now, mister, and where do you come from, and what are you doing?
Oh, I come from New York.
That's fascinating, but you're not American, are you, eh?
No, I'm from Sweden.
See, I could tell right away. You must be from someplace else. I told myself this man certainly can't be an American.
But then I went to New York.
And how long have you been there? And what have you been doing there?
You know, I have been a tailor, and I have worked there for 10 years in New York.
Wow, and just imagine myself. I've spent the last 14 years in this here romper. I saw it grow with my own eyes.
Uh-huh.
And it growed much. The railway station, the school.
Uh-huh.
We got a school, a brickstone and all. Progress is not stopped in romper.
The Swede asked about the crops and the price of labor. He seemed barely to listen to Scully's extended replies. His eyes continued to rove from man to man.
And how is life in New York? What's it like in the big city? It won't be long, and Romper itself will also be big.
New York? You know, New York is very big. But the West, I have read, the West is very dangerous.
After his statement, he straightened his legs under the table, tilted his head, and laughed again loudly. It was plain that the demonstration had no meaning to the others. They looked at him wondering and in silence.